days. Hey, Rob Harris has been very good to us through the journey when the big news comes in the world of sport from a European perspective, and there's nothing bigger than this European Super League disaster, really, that we've learned about in the last 48 hours. So much has changed. We thought we'd get him on to give us the latest. Rob, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Great to have you with us. Now, we spoke to you a couple of days ago when this was all breaking, this news about this European Super League and what it might mean and who is going to be involved. 48 hours later, Rob, effectively, it's disappeared. What's happened?
The shortest-lived competition in sports history, perhaps. The ball was even kicked before the whole thing imploded. And what a mess. What a chastening experience, particularly for the English clubs who had to go into complete climb-down mode with apologies, even from Joel Glazer, the co-owner of Manchester United, who rarely says anything at all in any form, even written statements. And, you know, he's accepted that they misjudged the mood of the fans, showed a lack of respect for the traditions of football and the pyramid system with promotion and relegation, because what this Super League would have done is created a largely closed European competition, replacing the open Champions League format for these teams with qualification secured through domestic finishes. Instead, the dozen and three more that they hope to add would be guaranteed a place year after year for more than two decades at least in this new Super League. And this went absolutely against the desires of their fans and particularly the British government and even the players, with the Liverpool players in particular going into open revolt on Tuesday night with a series of posts opposing it and backing the Champions League system that currently exists. And then, before not, the capitulation, the U-turn, and the announcement by the end of Tuesday that all six English clubs had quit the Super League. And then, by the morning, an acceptance from the Spanish and Italian clubs that it was over. But only over for now. The likes of Juventus in their statement dangling out hope that it could be revisited, saying they still believed in the objectives they were seeking and they would look at it again perhaps at some point. So no sense they are giving up, but it is doomed, it's over. And 48 hours that shook football, they've brought it back down to earth, and it seems like normality of sorts is back for now.
Rob, the biggest question in all of this, I think, watching it all unfold and being just staggered at the immediate response of the fans and the industry and the global football world, really, and then the retraction and the disappointment and the dissolving of the whole concept, is how did such intelligent people get this so very, very wrong?
They completely disregarded the potential backlash. There's been so long isolating themselves from fans and not engaging, particularly at Manchester United, for instance. And you've got the egos at places like Real Madrid, where they believe they are such huge beasts, like the president, Florentino Perez, that they were blinded by their own greed, it seemed to be, and lacking the sort of sense that they'd have to actually sell this vision to fans and to regular people and to mount the positive case. The fact is, plans emerged on Sunday and eventually were confirmed late in the evening European time. They put out a statement that was lacking considerable detail, a website that was lacking in depth, and a logo that was being mocked over its design, given the wealth behind it. And they didn't mount not only a PR offensive, but an offensive to win over fans. And that's something that they didn't do in terms of blitzing the airwaves to try to sell the positive vision. Instead, the critics took hold, particularly in the British sense of the government as well. They didn't even have German or French clubs on board. Paris Saint-Germain and Bayern Munich opted out. And sooner or later, it started to implode. They were threatened with expulsion from existing competitions. Players were threatened potentially with not being able to play for their countries, particularly at World Cup. And they witnessed the impending backlash, the steady sense that it all started to fall apart. And the fact is, they have the saints to blame for their strategic blunders.
So, Robbie, is this it? I mean, it has been spoken about for quite some time, this sort of concept. I think everyone was blindsided by when it was announced, as it was over the weekend, but do you see it potentially being reworked, or is the message very clear that there's no place for it?
I mean, it's been such a sort of humiliating defeat of such a, you know, a huge issue in Europe that it's very hard to see them reviving it sometime soon. But then these things do come around very often. They keep being revived as plans every few years. But I don't think we've seen it come to a head like this so publicly, so heavily, so high on the news agenda as well, and prompting, you know, parliamentary concern in Britain, the Prime Minister involved, the Prime Minister Boris Johnson summoning football leaders and fans to talk, to sort of show his solidarity and offering their backing just at the time. He's obviously dealing with the sort of the reopening of society and the pandemic, actually, you know, perhaps noticing there'd be some political leverage and ability to ride the wave of populism. But actually, it did reach the prime ministerial levels. This wasn't just a football issue, front page news in England. And without the English clubs, the project was doomed.
Yeah, so this is a question that's difficult to answer. But do you think there are problems with football? If we just even look at it, the UK, because they were saying that, there's issues with the young people not wanting or not liking football as much and not as passionate, and they're not connecting as much. Is that the case, or was that just part of the spin of trying to get it up?
I mean, part of that is the case is because of ticket prices being so high. It's harder then for youngsters to go. I mean, yes, we sort of think that's a halcyon days like 50 years ago, really cheap to go in, and you could go to games at ease, not days I remember, or were around four, I hate to add. But, so actually you would get a younger audience, and actually a more diverse range of social stratas if it wasn't so costly. And then, of course, there is the cost of watching it on television, the fact that obviously all games are on subscription TV normally, because all games have actually been televised due to the pandemic keeping fans out of games. Some of them have been put on free-to-air on the BBC in the UK, at least. But and there also is the retention of attention spans and the bigger trends in terms of attracting TV viewers to watch anything as habit shift, and we're used to perhaps not watching things on traditional linear TV but on catch up and streaming services as well. And the sense also on the flip side, the saturation of television of football on television as well, so it's retaining that interest. And football though obviously clearly does have the advantage of being the number one sport. It's not dealing with the same challenges as, say, cricket has faced in the UK, which is why they've had to try to invent the new 100 competition, which launches this year, because it's harder to sort of get those viewers for test matches. And accidentally, there isn't the interest in domestic cricket, in the county cricket. There is the interest in football in the national team games and the domestic games in a way that, say, some other sports don't have. So football still does have the advantageous position of being the number one sport, at least in Europe.
Are we going to see, Rob, any ownership changes now? I mean, they've clearly lost face with the fans and sentiment with the public. Do you think there'll be any changes to ownership out of the groups of the teams that have committed or did commit to this Super League, or will they just cop their whack and try and move forward?
Absolutely none of them forcing to do so, unless they fans actually started to cost the club financially, if sponsors withdrew or something like that under fan pressure. But at the moment, it's a short-term hit. And ultimately, because fans have been kept out of stadiums for so long, they'll be desperate to get back in when fans are eventually allowed to watch their team again. And when it could have been a very different scenario if we hadn't had this closure of stadiums to fans for the last year or so.
Yeah.
Would they boycott games this weekend if in a parallel universe that this is happening and they hadn't been starved of watching games this weekend. There are no fans at any Premier League games. Every stadium is empty. I was at Tottenham tonight against Southampton, the 2-1 victory for Ryan Mason in his first game in interim charge, 29-year-old manager. And outside, there were fan protests, Levy out, referencing Daniel Levy, the chairman. But, not even 100. It seemed nothing like the scenes at Chelsea on Tuesday night. But it would have been perhaps very different if fans had been allowed in the stadium. And we would have been talking about the narrative tonight, perhaps being like 90 minutes of protest and banners and things like that. But actually, it just felt like every other game, of course, like the last year, because there are no, there's barely 300 of us in the stadium at all to watch it. So, that's something we'll watch. Obviously, Sunday is the League Cup final. There are a couple of fans of both Tottenham and Manchester City, two Super League teams, in the stadium for that at Wembley. So will there be protests? Obviously, there aren't many of them. So you have to, first of all, have to see if they are the dissenters and the particularly vocal fans at all, or if they take any banners in. So, as for the pressure, as you say, nothing's forced them to do so. Liverpool fans haven't directly called for Fenway Sports Group to sell up. The United fans have a long-standing desire for the Glazers to depart for the right owner, and the Arsenal fans are pushing for Stan Kroenke to leave. Chelsea, they're calling for the chairman, Bruce Buck, to go, the official supporters group. They're not anti-Roman Abramovich because, of course, they are very grateful for the finances that have transformed their club over the last 18 years.
So will anything change at all in English football on the back of this, or will it just be it's a rough day and we'll get through it and we'll come out the other side?
I want to see what happens to their power. The big six who used to sort of push around their weight in the Premier League and the Premier League meetings, are they in any way chastened and do they sort of restrain themselves, or does actually normality resume? I think we find that actually, you know, these things potentially lead to a resumption of normality ultimately. Perhaps it helps that every Premier League meeting is on Zoom at the moment, or the equivalent. So they're not sitting around the same room together in the same hotel. So it might actually sort of calm things down before they actually do all sit around the table again and they're actually having to face each other rather than it being all a virtual confrontation together again. It's been a tumultuous period for European football with things shaken up like never before.
But you've covered it magnificently. I must admit, I've loved your feed on Twitter and reading your articles and finding out the latest. The work you've done has been enormous through this, and I've been absolutely captivated by the whole thing. I can't get enough of it, Rob. Appreciate your insight again this morning. Thank you very much.
No problem. Great to join you, Jack. Big thing.
Good stuff. Rob Harris, AP's global correspondent, covering the European Super League fiasco. Disaster.